Introduce yourself, please.
Good morning. My name's Melissa Rooker. I serve the 25th District in the Kansas House, and I'm happy to be here.
Oh, and we are happy to have you back, and we're got a lot to talk about, but first the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Melissa and myself this morning in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is my KCUR colleague Barb Shelley, who you can also read in the pitch. A pleasure to have you back at this table.
Great to be here.
We're going to spend most of our time together trying to unpack this monster that you people call school finance. We need to talk about the formula and the money, but first, I need to hear about your kids, Lindsay and Jack, right?
Correct.
I want to get an update on them and Charlie the dog.
Well, and there's I have a surprise new addition to share. So Lindsay got
We're
married.
Breaking news here.
We are. Lindsay got married a couple years ago, and she has a little boy.
So oh, my goodness. What's his name?
His name is Malcolm.
You're a grandmother?
Yes, I am.
You don't look half bad for a grandmother.
Thank you. And they live in Phoenix, and they're doing well. Mm-hmm. And Jack is in his senior year at KU and looking on ahead. He's taking the MCAT this summer and hopes to go on to med school. And Charlie is holding his own. He remains happy and hungry and playful, but he's dealing with the twilight years. He's got some health challenges.
I'm having a flashback here to a hip replacement for Charlie. Is that right?
That was, I think, around the time I was first on the podcast. Yes, he recovered nicely from that, but he does have lymphoma. So we're keeping him comfortable, and when he shows signs of being unhappy with life, we'll have to deal with that. But he's got terrific veterinary care.
A fine companion through all these
years.
He's
a great little dog.
All right. Now that we've got that, there's plenty to talk about here. And because I'm overwhelmed by the news and I don't know where to start, I'm going to have Barb start.
Okay. All right. Well, let's, you know, I think there's two big topics we want to discuss here, and then a lot of things going on. But why don't we start with school finance, Melissa? And, you know, I know that there's been a lot of action going on, and, you know, Superintendent Hinson proposed a plan that you didn't like, and then there's another plan on the table. Can you kind of pull all the pieces together for us and tell us where we are right now?
Sure. So school finance in the House is it has been undertaken by a special committee that the speaker stood up. It's the K-12 Budget Committee. 17-member House committee new this year, and our focus, our primary mission is to work out a plan to propose to our colleagues that yeah. provides a new funding formula. So we've spent time since the beginning of session having informational hearings and taking in the kind of data and just crafting the basic level of understanding among committee members to be able to start making decisions. Those of us that brought forward bill drafts that had proposals for new school funding plans introduced them, and each one was given its own day in court, so to speak. Well, maybe that's a bad analogy, but public hearings.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about court and school finance about that.
No, we had public hearings on each of the formulas introduced, and there was a big difference between several of the plans. So we aired out those issues through a public vetting process and have had plenty of time to examine those plans. With all of the information gathering, the chairman of the committee has he's brought forth what is being called the chairman's bill draft. It is a vehicle to serve as the basis for the formula that the House brings to the floor. And we've had 2 days of hearings on that bill draft, a third scheduled for Monday, and then the committee will get to work. And the work will involve bringing amendments and having mm-hmm. discussion as a committee about what elements we like, what we want to change, what we want to add, what we want to subtract, and ultimately get to the goal of having a funding plan.
I want to talk about just how much the chairman's bill puts in or suggests that goes in there. Chairman Larry Campbell, who is a mm-hmm. representative from Olathe, he's proposed 75 million new dollars to put into public education. And I don't think there's anybody in the legislature, maybe not even him, who believes that's enough money to satisfy the state Supreme Court.
Oh, I think there are people who think that would be enough. I think there are people who think that we don't need to put any new dollars in. We should rearrange what we're doing. But even I would agree, Chairman Campbell knows it's just a starting point. He's repeatedly said that. I definitely don't agree that that's sufficient funding. I do think that it's realistic to phase in funding over a period of a certain a number of years, whether, you know, somewhere in the range of 3 to 5 years, I think is the expectation people should have. We're not going to come up with a massive sum of money all at once. Even if we could, schools need time to implement programs and hire staff and make the plans to spend those dollars. So right up front, a big, bold infusion of cash like that would not actually be spendable all at once. So they need a little time to put their programs in place and rebuild their staff levels. And so I think we can phase in funding. I do think that the goal is very clearly defined in the lawsuit. There's a lot of time in the opinion spent pointing to the only cost study that we have to refer back to. It was done in 2005. So even without accounting for inflation and its effect, we fall but somewhere between, I think it's $600 to $800 million short of where that cost study says we should have been 12 years ago. So to me, it's unrealistic to think that we'll satisfy things and do right by our children, which I remind people that's what this is all about, is making sure our children have the appropriate opportunities. It will take significant money, but so over time, I think the goal needs to be in the neighborhood of $700 or $800 million.
So you've actually, you know, criticized a proposal by Jim Henson that would benefit the Shawnee Mission School District, but possibly not other districts around
the
state.
Well, and let me be clear. While it does sort of benefit Shawnee Mission, mm-hmm. it relies heavily on the idea that we would simply go out with property tax increases on our local patrons. And I think we're reaching the saturation point on what people's level of tolerance is for property tax increases. I know there were shockwaves that went through Johnson County over everybody's new tax assessments for the coming year. I've heard from constituents wanting me to step in and try and fix their property tax bills for them, which I don't have the power to do. That's a county level decision. But I don't think that assuming that people will perpetually take a vote to raise their taxes, even if it's going to our schools, which I know we care about, I don't think that's realistic. And I don't think it's a proper reflection of today's demographic makeup of Johnson County. There's a column in this morning's paper that an opinion piece that takes me to task for not being willing to roll back time to pre-1992 funding mechanisms, which did give us unlimited local authority. And I would remind people that plan was found unconstitutional then. It's why we created a new formula in 92. There has been significant legal work done in the ensuing years that set precedent in place very firmly that kind of local authority creates wealth-based disparities. It dates back to Brown versus Board of Education when skin tone was the disparity that created inequity. And we're just not going to roll back time. It's like saying make America great again. It's ignoring the growth and change in Johnson County. We were a very different place 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And some of the areas of our district that weren't built out. Now, you know, there are demographic issues that mean that three of the six Johnson County school districts would not benefit under the plan that Dr. Henson proposed. So, I mean, no disrespect to anyone personally, but his proposal disadvantaged more than 225 districts in the state of Kansas. There is no way a plan like that will meet the constitutional test. And it's not appropriate for us to take that very parochial view and erect a wall around our county and say we don't care what happens outside of it.
You know, I'll tell you the thing that's surprising when I saw that budget is one of the things before we went to this block grant for 2 years that you always heard, especially from the governor's office, was the old formula, way too complicated.
Right.
The humans weren't meant to understand something so complicated. And he, I don't know if you remember, but on his Facebook page, he put part of the formula, and it's really just complicated arithmetic.
It's just math.
Right, it's just math. And so now we look at this bill, and it doesn't, Barb, I mean, and you've been, you know, covering this longer than me. I have to say, looks even more complicated, doesn't it?
Oh, as I understand it, there's, you know, you practically have to have a calculator in your hand when you read the bill.
Well, even the way we count our students is not straightforward.
Right.
There's
like two counts, and there's an average going back.
There's two count days, and then we do a three-year calculation of prior years, but it's the difference between year four and year three multiplied by one, the difference between year three and year two multiplied by two, the difference between year two and year one multiplied by three.
And at some point, then
we divide by six and add that into your head count. I mean, really, to get to the number of students we're funding, what the hell? Why don't we just count them and fund that?
At some point, we crossed the international date line. I can't remember. I don't know. It's a very complicated formula.
Well, it wasn't entirely written by our chairman. This is the underlying
bits and pieces, right?
He guided it, but we have a member of the K-12 Budget Committee who is a returning legislator, Clay Arend from Bellevue, Kansas, and Clay chaired education, and a lot of these ideas are simply his old ideas that never made it through the process that he's put forward in this bill draft, and he's making another go of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, you know, you're doing this against a backdrop of, you know, another overwhelming budget gap for the budget you're trying to develop for the next 2 years. And I'm just wondering, you know, I actually am surprised at how positive and resolute you sound, because I think I would want to run and hide in a closet with all these problems. But so how does that play into it?
We can do this. We have the capacity to solve these problems. I sometimes use the analogy that we in the legislature are like Monty Hall. We decide what's behind door number one, two, and three. We get to make the decisions that and craft the options available to us. So it is a very solvable problem as long as we are willing to be realistic. I'm very proud to be a member of the Kansas House, where we have taken a very straightforward approach to problem solving. We've crafted some remedies. We've taken some very difficult votes, but we've done the work that we are called upon to do, which is to solve the math problem. The state has a budget that, you know, we have cut nine times over a course of the last few years in order to try and meet declining revenues. We're not overlooking reining in spending and shrinking government. We've reduced the government employee roster by thousands of people. We have maintained a lot of lids on growth in spending, but even with the efficiency study that was done last year, a lot of the recommendations involve investment in order to become more efficient. We can't use old, outmoded computer programs and equipment and expect to be able to crunch data the way it it should be crunched to be more effective and efficient for all sorts of government functions. When we're paying mandatory overtime to staff prisons and state mental hospitals and the kinds of institutions that the state is responsible for operating that cannot go on with open shifts, but we have such staffing shortages, then, you know, we're stepping over savings because we can't do anything other than that. We have had if you talk to any of my colleagues that serve in any capacity on budget committees, appropriations, ways and means, or any of the subcommittees on budget, every last one of us has spent the session listening to agency after agency across the spectrum come in to talk about the dire fiscal circumstances mm-hmm. and the effects those are having. Our state hospital was decertified, so that creates a loss of funding of about $1 million a month from the federal government. So there are, I could go on and on with a list of ways that we are losing money by our political refusal to do what's necessary and right. And that is, yes, it involves raising taxes.
That's the untold story of Kansas government, isn't it? The breakdown in the agencies and the departments.
Yeah. Systemic, it's statewide, and it is in agencies where I truly believe people's lives are hanging in the balance for our lack of action.
You're talking about people who would use state hospitals, people—
Foster care. DCF is down 463 state employees, short of what they need to do the appropriate inspections of the placement of our foster children. And we have actually had serious incidents. We've had fatalities within that system. And I think the investigations are uncovering really, really disturbing facts about, you know, what should have happened that didn't. We've had, you know, there was an attack at Osawatomie that led to the decertification. A staffer was assaulted by a patient. Safety, public safety is on the line in a lot of ways.
Well, we still haven't, and while they've made up a few troopers in the Kansas Highway Patrol, they're still below staff. Kansas Bureau of Investigation is short investigators.
There's a backlog of investigations that they can't get to in a timely manner. I mean, the list goes on and on. So we always talk about schools and their funding, but, you know, the mental health safety net is in tatters. We have people who should be receiving treatment who are instead incarcerated because that's where they belong, but it's because law enforcement picks them up and they're in crisis and can't go home, so they've got to go somewhere. But we don't have the facilities to house them where they can get the proper mental health treatment.
Well, that would segue into Medicaid expansion, wouldn't it? Because if you would expand Medicaid, that would pick up a lot of the mental health costs.
Sure, and I voted to do just that this year. The House mm-hmm. passed that bill. I'm pleased to say the Senate will have their debate on, I think it's scheduled Monday, and they very likely will also pass the bill, and then it's on the governor.
Well, let me ask you about the governor. First, do you think Medicaid expansion will be vetoed? And in a bigger, broader sense, I want to hear from you where you think the governor has been on all these big issues. We haven't heard much from the governor's office on school finance. Haven't heard much from him. He did veto a tax plan. But I want to know from you, do you think he and his administration are engaged enough with the legislature to help push out a product that everybody can agree with and gets Kansas, from your point of view, back on the right track? Where's the governor on all this?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. First, I don't want to forecast what he will or won't do with the bill. I don't want to color debate with the expectation that he will absolutely veto it. I think it's our job to pass legislation and then it's up to him to consider it. I would express the hope that he does choose to sign it into law. The state is losing a tremendous amount of federal money. That's one of the things that the A&M study said. We do a poor job of bringing back home federal dollars that are available to us. This is a significant piece of that. It would do wonders for the Kansas economy to bring that money home and allow it to go to work for Kansans. And remember, those are our federal tax dollars. So as we are in the midst of tax season and people are writing their checks to the United States Treasury, Kansas is choosing not to bring a portion of that money home to put to work in our state, and that's just flat wrong. We've had a hospital close, and there are communities, hospitals across the state that are on the brink, so it will definitely help improve access to health care. It will help improve the bottom line for the budget by providing care for people. And these are people caught in the coverage gap. The stereotypical person who isn't working to help themselves isn't in the category of people that expansion would cover. We're talking about hardworking folks who do not earn enough to purchase health insurance on their own, or they are not employed in jobs that provide it to them. There are a variety of reasons why they don't have access to health insurance coverage. The expansion would create a pool for those folks to participate in. So it's able-bodied people who are working very hard who deserve health care. In terms of the rest of what you were questioning, the governor has largely been absent this session and has shown very little of what I would call leadership, and it's frustrating. I think that truly, in a time like this, a true leader would make the appropriate adjustment to his message and lead us to solutions that get the state back to a place of stability and position to grow and succeed in the future. And to me, it's pretty simple. I mean, I without veering from his deeply held economic beliefs, it doesn't seem hard to me to point the finger at all of the factors he has been blaming up till now. Oil and gas prices, ag prices, the national economy, whatever factors, the internet sales taking away from sales in brick and mortar stores. There's a long litany of things he has blamed for the drop in Kansas revenues since the tax plan passed in 2012. So go ahead, blame all that. But acknowledge that those factors, whatever you're blaming, mean we're not bringing in enough revenue to actually make ends meet. And let's be responsible and do what's necessary to put our fiscal house back in order. What instead is getting proposed are really, really risky maneuvers and you know, taking on a boatload of debt and sweeping savings accounts and you know, these proposals to securitize future payments that are already dedicated to certain purposes. It's just a long list of the kinds of behaviors that if we were engaged in personally, we would be on the brink of declaring bankruptcy and perhaps going to jail.
Mm-hmm. I want to give Barb the last word here in just a second, but I just want to follow up on something that you on this. I just want to stay with this for a moment longer. So as you head into next week, and the real hard work, I think, rolls up on you about school finance, right? I mean, you're going to start working the bill. Mm-hmm. You have maybe one more day of
hearings, and then we will open work sessions. And I should add that people don't have to be in Topeka to follow along. This committee that is handling this process meets in it's called the Old Supreme Courtroom, and our meetings every day this session right. have been live streamed and available so that people can watch us in action.
I have been watching you in action, both live and on the internet. And I have to say that it's taking you a long time to get there, but at least you're here now. But that's not my question. The question here is, as you start to work this bill, the unknown is, what is the governor going to do? And would it be helpful to you if you knew some of the parameters, right, where his limits are as you're crafting a bill so that you're not working in the dark, so a bill gets passed and it's kind of a flip of the coin to know whether he's going to veto or not. I mean, wouldn't it be easier if there was some guidance, if he was in the room, he being his administration, in the room working on this with you?
As the legislature, it is our job to craft legislation, and our mission here is to create a plan that will meet the constitutional test. Are we funding adequately? Is it distributed equitably? That is our job. And, you know, frankly, the opinion is where the guidance comes from, and the body of evidence from every round of this case and prior cases, that's what we have to keep in mind. And so what would be nice is if the governor and his people would come along with us down that road and work collaboratively. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not there to wait to be told what the governor will or won't accept. I'm there to analyze and solve. And that, you know, that's a very different proposition than what you're describing, having him in the room or his staff in the room to tell us what it is he wants us to be doing, that he can accept that sort of thing. No, I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work.
Barb, your final thought or question for Melissa Rooker?
Just looking down the road when the session ends, May, June, July, I hope it doesn't go beyond then.
Can't really go past June 30.
because of the budget. What will fundamentally be different about Kansas government as a result of this session, if you could look ahead?
Well, you know, what already is fundamentally different from recent past is that we are working together in a collaborative manner across the political divide. And I mean that to be both internal party politics as well as, you know, the traditional conflict between the two parties. I think we've done a much better job this year collectively of being able to talk to each other and work together. We don't always, it doesn't mean we're agreeing, but the level of animosity and rancor has been toned down enough that we can talk to each other and share ideas and try and compromise has become less stigmatized. And so we really are beginning to see that we can function and put things back on a better path by that kind of collaborative effort.
Will Kansas have a new tax structure?
Yes, we will, and we will have a school funding plan. You said it earlier, I remain very optimistic that we can solve these problems.
And will Kansas have Medicaid expansion?
I'm less sure. I don't know, but we're going to, you know, we've done what we can do so far to make that happen.
Okay.
Do you want to just follow up on what you said about how you guys are working together? And having watched this K-12 budget committee, it seems to me that you're sort of leading the way on that. There's an enormous number of different views on that committee. And when you're in that committee room, it does feel as if everybody is being heard. How do you think about that?
I would agree. I think it's been a very open process. The chairman has encouraged collaboration. He's been inclusive of a variety of points of views. My first 4 years, committee chairman ran committees. If they agreed with the opinion of the conferee, time was unlimited. If it was someone they disagreed with, it was a very, very limited and structured the time for that point of view to be aired, and that was that. And this, so this has been vastly different. One of the comments made today was that I'm not an attorney. What do I know about these issues? And I would remind people that I have been focused on the funding problems with our schools for more than a decade. I am inquisitive. I'm an avid reader. I am well connected with people who are attorneys and do know these things. And I love, you know, that collaborative effort of gathering information from the right experts has helped informed the positions I adopt. So I do wonder sometimes if I were a guy, if people would be quite as critical of my voice on these issues. There is some of that bias afoot more often than it ought to be. But I would say the chairman has done an admirable job of maintaining an open and collaborative atmosphere in the committee.
Your voice is always welcome here. You've made my day by what you said.
Thank you.
Barb Shelley, my KCUR bunkie, and also at The Pitch. Thanks for being here. Always a pleasure. Statehouse Blend Kansas is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you do your podcast business. If you've got that NPR One app, search for us in Explore and click subscribe. Fan of the Twitter? You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff, and my colleague Brian Ellison, who hosts Statehouse Blend Missouri, is at PTS Brian. By the way, you can join Brian for a Statehouse Blend live event on March 30th at the Rock and Run in downtown Liberty. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.